Russia is ready to continue cooperation to de-escalate tensions on the Korean Peninsula and strengthen the security of the whole of Northeast Asia.
Asian summits aim to define power and trade. It's Monday, April 29th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, luring business to Myanmar, dealing with visa overstays, social media's growing social responsibilities, new mountains, and an endgame. At the movies, that is. It's all on today's VOA Asia. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and Russian President Vladimir Putin vowed they would work toward closer ties at a summit Thursday in the far eastern Russian city of Vladivostok. But the meeting was not likely to have much effect on Kim's deadlocked nuclear talks with the United States, as we hear from Bill Gallo from Seoul.
Kim Jong-un went to Russia with one big request: relief from sanctions that are punishing his economy. But it's not clear if Vladimir Putin gave him what he wants. There were a lot of opportunities for pictures, but few details emerged from the discussion, and both men mostly stuck to talking points.
Russia is ready to continue cooperation to de-escalate tensions on the Korean Peninsula and strengthen the security of the whole of Northeast Asia.
I am proposing a toast to happiness and the beautiful future of our two countries' people.
Afterwards, Putin said he is open to discussing a pipeline or railways through North Korea, but appeared to offer Kim no relief from sanctions, which Putin himself helped put in place.
Putin has to be pretty careful because publicly he can't really go back on the commitment Russia made in 2017 to those UN sanctions.
Putin also raised the possibility of a return to six-party talks on North Korea's nuclear weapons program. Those multilateral discussions broke down more than a decade ago.
From the American point of view, I would say pretty confidently this is a non-starter.
Kim seems to have left the summit in much the way he came in, searching for economic help with few places left to turn. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Also, over the past few days, China hosted leaders from 37 countries for its Belt and Road Initiative, a massive development program expected to involve more than $1 trillion for infrastructure projects. The United States warns countries that the projects are primarily aimed at boosting China's economy, and the financial terms carry risks to countries' economies. VOA's Jesusima Oni has more.
A parade of leaders arrive in Beijing for a summit showcasing China's growing influence. They have traveled from all over the world because China is offering high-speed train links, more than ports, and new highways.
In Africa, South America, Middle East, and some European countries, they see it's a great opportunity because the Belt and Road Initiative primarily emphasizes infrastructure development, which is also made China become successful at the first place in terms of economic development.
However, the U.S. says countries could end up with a bad deal, accusing Beijing of trying to lure nations into a debt trap. The Belt and Road Initiative has funded trains, roads, and ports in several developing nations. It has also left some struggling to repay the Chinese loans, further fueling concerns about the program's high cost and lack of transparency.
Some of the recipient countries are worried that the funding is actually helping Chinese companies more than their own companies. Maybe in some cases it's encouraging corruption or damaging the environment. And so we're starting to see a bit of pushback.
China this year is adjusting its approach, reducing the cost of some projects, pledging environmental safeguards, and offering to collaborate with partners such as Japan.
In this regard, I don't think there's such a problem, and BRI can only bring them a great deal of help and bring about development.
The BRI, which aims to link Asia to Europe and Africa, continues to gain momentum. Despite warnings from the West, Italy recently became the first European nation to join the program, signing on with deals worth 2.5 million euros. With Switzerland now following suit, Beijing hopes to attract even more. Jesus Semeoni, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Thousands march in Hong Kong against extradition law. Documents show Indonesia released banned North Korean coal. Xi Jinping says China wants to expand sprawling Belt and Road project. Bolton says U.S. ignored $2 million bill from North Korea. Trump and Abe cap visit with golf outing. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Myanmar's de facto leader and Nobel Peace Prize laureate Aung San Suu Kyi is welcoming businesses to invest in Rakhine State, more than a year and a half since a brutal military crackdown forced hundreds of thousands of minority Rohingya Muslims to flee into neighboring Bangladesh. Despite the push for investment, many residents in Rakhine State worry they will not see any benefits. Libby Hogan has this report from Rakhine State.
A zone without hatred declares this sign in Chukpu Beach in Rakhine State, Western Myanmar. But this quiet beach is in the southern part of the same state where in the north, the military launched a brutal crackdown against the minority Rohingya Muslims beginning in August 2017, forcing more than 700,000 to flee. Now, big business is being welcomed to this coastal region by Aung San Suu Kyi, the de facto leader in Myanmar, formerly known as Burma. She recently urged Chinese and Japanese business leaders to invest in Rakhine's oil and gas fields, downplaying troubles in the state.
For too long, the international community's attention has been focused narrowly on negative aspects related to problems in North Rakhine, rather than on the panoramic picture that shows the immense potential of this state for peace and prosperity.
But the crisis in Rakhine seems far from over. Journalists and investigators are not allowed into the same state to investigate reports of human rights abuses against the minority Muslim Rohingya. Many who fled still live in crowded camps in Bangladesh. The Rakhine villages where they lived have been bulldozed and Burmese contractors have been hired to build processing sites for those who want to return. In Rakhine's Sitwe region, more than 120,000 Rohingya Muslims have lived in camps surrounded by wire fencing for 7 years. South in Chukpu, the land is mostly owned by ethnic Rakhine. They say they've been shut out of talks about investment projects. And they complain they've seen few benefits from billion-dollar investments, such as this joint venture Chinese and Myanmar oil and gas pipeline, part of its One Road, One Belt initiative.
When the project began, local people got only small jobs like selling rocks and carrying sand at the construction sites. But for the skilled jobs, our local people were not hired. Locals cannot get any long-term benefits from the project.
A watchdog group monitoring China's pipeline projects says farmers still haven't been paid for land taken years ago.
There was no transparency about compensation when villagers' land was confiscated. So villagers do not know if they will get the same amount that is written on paper.
Rakhine farmer La Thane says he was paid for the grazing land where the pipeline was built, but not for all the crops ruined during its construction.
Farmers feel angry because now they can't grow crops on their farmland because of the mud.
With billions of dollars in gas and oil underground, people in this troubled province are likely headed for more upheaval in the years to come if they continue to see no benefits from investment. Libby Hogan for VOA News, Chukpu Beach, Myanmar.
happening now in Asia, President Trump urged Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe to have Japanese automakers produce more vehicles in the United States. That according to a readout of their recent meeting provided by the U.S. ambassador to Japan. Trump has prodded Japanese automakers to add more U.S. jobs. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're starting out a brand new week. We're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. President Trump this week proposed new measures to crack down on people who travel to the United States on a visa and then illegally remain in the country after their visa expires. The new policy will punish countries with high rates of visa overstays and will mostly impact African nations, as we hear from White House correspondent Patty Whitaker-Suwara.
In 2018, the United States issued more than 9 million non-immigrant visas for visitors including tourists, students, and temporary workers from all over the world. About 2% remained longer than allowed in the country. The White House has ordered the Secretaries of State and Homeland Security to identify ways to reduce non-immigrant visa overstays within 3 months. Countries that do not reduce their high overstay rates could be penalized with tougher U.S. visa requirements. The policy is seen as an extension of Trump's push to reduce illegal immigration beyond unauthorized border crossings.
Congress must also act to fix, however, our horrible, obsolete, weak, pathetic immigration laws.
Under the plan, some countries could see tightened visa restrictions or even requirements that travelers pay admission bonds, which would be refunded when they leave. Government data show that in recent years, non-immigrant visa overstays exceed the number of border apprehensions, making up a significant portion of the approximately 11 million people living in the U.S. illegally. But some analysts question the administration's strategy of targeting countries with high overstay rates rather than countries with a high number of overstaying individuals.
Chad has an overstay rate or a suspected overstay rate about 20%. But that only translates to about 140 people in 2017, whereas you have a country like the United Kingdom, which has more than 23,000 overstays suspected in 2017. So although the rate for the United Kingdom is very low, the numbers, 23,000, is much more than 140.
Djibouti, Solomon Islands, Eritrea, Chad, Liberia, and Somalia are among those with the highest overstay rates. It's unclear what steps the countries could take to convince travelers to return home. The administration has not responded to VOA questions about the motivations behind focusing on overstay rates, but immigration activists say the move unfairly targets African countries and could be challenged in the courts.
If the government decided that they were going to limit B1, B2 tourist business visas to people from African nations, you could bring a claim based on discrimination and say that this rule change or this administrative change is arbitrary and actually based in discrimination.
Analysts point out there may be another reason why the administration is focusing on countries with high overstay rates.
These countries are smaller countries, and that the administration may feel that it's easier to deal with them than trying to tackle a large country in which we have a lot of interactions with, like Canada or Mexico or the United Kingdom.
Canada, Mexico, and the United Kingdom are countries with the top five highest number of total overstays, as well as Brazil and Venezuela. The Trump administration says it considers tackling visa overstays a priority to protect American taxpayers. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Coming up, social media is a force to address social issues. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia. Thousands of protesters have marched through downtown Hong Kong in opposition to changes to an extradition law that may see it as eroding the territory's independent legal system. Hong Kong police said around 22,800 people took part in the protest at its peak. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, social media companies such as Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook are not legally responsible for the content that users upload to their sites. That legal protection has been key to their explosive growth, but there's a growing consensus that companies must do more to root out misleading content. Michelle Quinn reports the companies may be taking action in the hope of avoiding stricter government regulation.
It began, like so many other falsehoods on social media, as the Notre Dame Cathedral burned in Paris, fake news and conspiracy theories started to crop up on Twitter, jumped to Facebook, and percolated on YouTube. This time, however, none of them really went viral.
I think tech platforms would point to the things they're trying to do to limit the spread of misinformation as saying, hey, this is proof that what we're doing is working. Honestly, like from where I sit, I think it's really just like more people are aware that this is happening. So people are less likely to share something like right out the bat.
People are also expecting action from the companies. Facebook is collaborating with fact checkers to weed out objectionable content. Twitter has targeted bots, automatic accounts that spread falsehoods. YouTube is trying to alter its algorithm to make it harder to find problematic videos. Some say it's not enough.
What have you done to ensure that all your folks out there globally know the dog whistles and know the key words, the phrasing, you know, the things that people respond to ensure that we can stop some of this and be more proactive in blocking some of this language?
We do have 30,000 people now focused on safety and security, and within that 30,000 people, we have specific subject matter experts that focus on this area. So we have academics, we have other people who come from civil society, human rights backgrounds, to really dive deep in this area. We do use a lot of our automation and artificial intelligence to help surface, to help provide the data analysis.
Well, I hope you do more. Thank you.
Right now, there's a lot of outsourcing going on. In other words, washing our own hands of the problem rather than saying, this is a mess we've created and we are going to devote resources that will lower the profits to shareholders because it will require a deeper investment in our own company. And that at a massive level is not what's going on.
For now, human fact checkers are using technology to monitor the sites and flag objectionable content.
They are then able to create a database now of bad actors, and they can start taking action against them, which will reduce the impressions, reduce their financial incentive because they'll get less clicks and they'll get less advertising.
While reducing impressions slows the spread of misinformation, it also slows Facebook's growth. Does being more responsible mean making less money? Social media companies are trying to find that out. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
This news from VOA Asia, U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton has confirmed recent reports. The United States signed a document agreeing to pay North Korea $2 million for the medical care of American Otto Warmbier, who had been detained by Pyongyang. But Bolton says the bill was ignored and never paid. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, mountains are not just above the ground where we can see, as scientists have found mountains exist deep in the earth. VOA's Rick Pantaleo takes a moment to explain.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of scientists found evidence that the topography of the mantle transition zone, a layer of Earth's composition that lies between the upper and lower mantle layers, is similar to mountains that can be found on the surface. The international group of researchers studied data from a powerful earthquake in Bolivia and discovered there are mountains and other topographical features located about 660 kilometers straight below our feet. They added that many areas of the mantle transition zone are rougher in nature and that a number of these subterranean mountains may be bigger than what can be found on Earth's surface. Writing in a recent edition of the journal Science, the scientists say they made their findings after analyzing seismic wave data produced by a Category 8.2 earthquake that rocked the South American country in 1994. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Avengers Endgame marks the culmination of Marvel's superhero universe since its first Iron Man film back in 2008. Critics have hailed the three-hour movie as a super spectacle and a befitting ending, hearkening back to the beginnings of the Avengers franchise. VOA's Penelope Palou spoke with critics and industry insiders about the significance of the film, about its franchise, and the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
After a cliffhanger ending of Avengers Infinity War, where the galactic overlord Thanos reduces half of Earth's planet life to dust, the second installment, Avengers Endgame, is the final chapter of the Avengers franchise, bringing together all the superheroes of the Marvel Universe in a final battle against the omnipotent Titan. Washington Post comic book culture reporter David Betancourt says the film is expected to be the blockbuster of all blockbusters.
Endgame is the final chapter of something we've never seen before, which is a connected narrative through multiple film franchises over the course of a decade. This will be the 22nd Marvel Studios film.
But what elements create a blockbuster of such magnitude? Above all, according to Paul Rudd, who plays Ant-Man, it is the characters.
These characters are archetypes. And the emotional resonance, the relationships they have with one another, and it's really the main thing that makes the movies work.
Then there's the storyline, says Thor actor Chris Hemsworth.
I think it's the darkest in some ways. The sort of wackiest, in other words. It feels like a, you know, there's a real sort of drama at the core of it, you know, a sort of small indie character-driven sort of drama on one hand, and then coupled with it being the most expensive, biggest, visually stunning, smorgasbord effects-driven film you could ever imagine.
A blockbuster could not be without an unexpected ending, says Avengers pioneer Iron Man actor Robert Downey Jr.
The last 8 minutes of that movie are maybe the best 8 minutes in the entire history of the whole run of them, in a way, you know, because everyone's involved.
Plot and characters aside, a blockbuster is about money, says Hollywood insider Stephen Paterno.
Disney with the Marvel Universe and the Star Wars Universe are, and never mind Pixar and all their family-friendly animations there, clearly have a blockbuster factory. And so, yes, that is generating billions, if not 10-plus billion dollars in theatrical revenue, but then it drives television and theme parks and action figures and the rest.
Movie theaters across the country offered marathon screenings of all 22 Marvel Cinematic Universe movies leading up to the premiere of Avengers Endgame.
Endgame, just based off of the pre-sales and the hype, it wouldn't surprise me if it inched towards $3 billion.
Dollars, that is. The end of the Avengers franchise also signals a new phase of Marvel Universe featuring a more ethnically diverse superhero universe, says Betancourt.
You have Black Panther, it made $1 billion. You have Captain Marvel, it made $1 million. Marvel Studios is now in pre-production on an all-Asian ensemble for an Asian superhero that they have in their ranks. They've proven that there's an audience for those type of heroes. Not only an audience, but that the same audience you were treating with those initial Avengers movies wants to see those type of movies as well.
Hey, Miss Potts. If you find this recording, don't feel bad about this. Part of the journey is the end.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on the radio throughout Asia on many great radio stations, like CCU Radio at National Chungcheng University in Taipei, Taiwan. We thank everyone there who's tuned into our program today. And if you like, you can catch us online as well, VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com, as well as downloading our program from iTunes and SoundCloud. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Zeynep Abdel-Rahman, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.